Welcome to Brutal Total Fear, the only podcast that doesn't submit to terror. We make the terror. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 4, Episode 13, Chapter 52. This is it. This is the big one.
I got the fear sweats from that intro.
I got the fear sweats from the episode,
from
man.
The state of the State of the Union at the end of things.
Christ, this... I don't know how much you want to get into it right off the bat, but I feel foolish for thinking they wouldn't sink to these depths. This level.
It is breath. I mean, if you have to replay the Never Will They Ever game now, like, I can't remember who, and we're going to talk about it in the feedback, but someone is openly questioning whether the button will be pushed before season five. I don't think you can take it off the table.
Certainly. I mean, if he's willing to go to war to preserve the presidency,
his
office in the presidency, what wouldn't he do?
I mean, you could be heading for supreme dictator for life land here. I mean, it's...
Might be a stretch.
Why?
Subverting the entire Constitution.
Well, I mean, if you're declaring war to bury a scandal...
But it's public, right? Like, that would be public. Everyone would know, oh, he's exceeding his terms in office. He's becoming an emperor instead of a dictator.
Well,
instead
but I'm saying
a
it's like literally
president.
The Palpatine playbook. I've launched nuclear bombs. And like maybe it's a like that's maybe it's a false flag type of
useless.
Deal. Yeah, it's you know I need more emergency wartime powers.
Blockaded Naboo.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Okay, maybe that seems still seems like a stretch. But if you had asked me, will Frank declare war to stay in power? I probably would have said I'm not certain about that.
It's just always instructive to look back at the country's history and what, like, you know, what rights got suspended during the Civil War and how we imprisoned a whole bunch of United States citizens in World War II and how there are people talking about, you know, registering and denying entry of anyone of Muslim descent in the country. Like, I don't know what you can say is and isn't possible with the right set of circumstances.
I mean,
like, we're one
subverting the election process entirely. Just not having an election doesn't seem like you could get away with that.
Yeah, but I always like to think what happens the day after a dirty nuke goes off in New York City or LA? Like, this country,
we want to strike back.
It's fuck. Well, and not only that, but we take what's left of our like Fourth Amendment rights and. Just completely destroy it
in order to strike back. Sure, yeah.
And also to be safe. I think that's more than anything what everyone wants is to be safe. And
I'm saying,
like, what if – I'm not saying that Frank is going to be, like, wear the black hood and play the Imperial March and just, you know, electrocute the entire press corps in the Rose Garden. I'm saying that he –
Press
like,
corps? I guess it would be at that corps. Point.
The press corps. Not even reading it. It just came out. Yeah. I don't know, man. It's like I don't know what the ceiling for Eve – especially I asked last episode, would he do a false flag operation? Like a not – hell yes, he would. Hell yes, he would.
Yeah.
Like he might not be pushing a nuke. He might just be nuking a U.S. city and – yeah, it'd be interesting to see how – I would love to see them try to plausibly pull that off because, again, you know, what are you going to do? Tell, like, a CIA, get the CIA on the phone and be like, hey, I got an operation for you. Why don't you take this briefcase?
Right.
Like, that's one of the real reasons I have a hard time believing any kind of conspiracy because I don't think in the real world you can get a dozen people together and have them do something like that and it not get out.
Yeah, he was kind of lucky that they didn't get this guy back from the terrorists.
Sure.
Because that gave him an opportunity to do this, whereas he might have had to manufacture or at least try to manufacture something.
I mean, it would have been so it. if the, you know, the Miller dad,
yeah.
If he escapes or gets out of there, you're right. Like I still think
well,
Francis goes for. I still think he goes for the war. Yep. Just on the hey, they've committed an act of war on U.S. soil.
Yep.
But it's a lot without that imagery of the guy getting his head cut off on TV and YouTube and whatever. It seems like it's a harder thing to sell.
Right, and like I think now it's too late. Now that he's declared the war, like he's said, look, we're not going to stop this, no matter whether he's given back alive, whether you kill him,
sure,
whatever. Now it's a matter of principle, that sort of thing. Now he's not going to turn back, regardless of that guy's fate. But had that guy been saved before he declared this publicly,
it might have made,
he would have had no reason to do that.
And it would have, yeah, it would have,
or a less substantial reason, I guess.
Yeah, and I think it would give it. It would give Congress a lot more cover to oppose him.
Yeah. So I was blown away by the end of this episode, frankly.
Yeah. So do you want to talk about our overall season 4 thoughts, or wait until we get done with the meat of the episode?
Let's do the episode first.
So I was trying to tease out if you saw what was coming with the big reveal of what Claire and Frank's plan was last episode, and it sounded like you were like me, you were flat footed when we get this Amati situation where they have, you know, they did this all slyly in the last few episodes. They talked about how they captured him, but they don't really mention him again. And now you got this guy getting released, and he's face to face with Claire, and you're like, oh God, I know who this is. And now you start to see this plan that they're trying to put in motion, which is essentially Frank playing hardball with the American terrorists. They're saying, if you release the Millers, we'll release Amani. Wait, not Armani.
No, it's one of those. Amati. I can't tell what they were saying.
It is. But yeah, no, it's like Frank's doing this just because he wants a discount on suits. But I like that rapid fire negotiation they went in, where he's like, you've got 10 seconds. We release no one until you release all three, mother and daughter, all three, father and mother. And he's like, it felt pretty cool.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he was playing hardball, and I like to see Frank play some hardball.
Yeah.
There was a lot of concern about this Conway thing and the lying, and they kind of unleash that right off the bat here.
Yeah.
And then that just totally gets subverted by the other news, the other story that's running.
I will say that even though I don't think Conway was the match for Frank, it's almost like Frank is kind of half fighting himself at this. He's fighting his old scandals coming back. So Conway, and that's a believable way forward, that the hero's own machinations start folding in on him. So even though he's against a lesser foe, it's still a fair fight because he's now distracted by all this stuff. And I thought that actually worked surprisingly well. Also, I felt like, even though I said last episode I thought Conway had gone too far to like the evil side, I like how they played him in this, where he's just overwhelmed. I mean, have you ever had a bad day where you just snap at people and are dick and there's no justification for it? It just kind of happens.
Yeah.
Hardly none of us, shaking our heads, yes, have had a day as bad as this guy's day has gone.
Right. He's under a lot of pressure. This election is kind of ruining his life in some ways.
Sure.
His family life.
I can't imagine what it's like to run as president and then lose. It's kind of like the same way I feel about whenever you see the Super Bowl team, the losers. It's like, you've planned all year for this. You came so close, and you lose. And like, how
all the preparation
that's
and work.
That's been your life for sometimes, you know, 2 years. You've been working towards this and kissing ass and raising money and betraying your principles and, you know, having people with microscopes up your ass all the time. Like, it's got to be a mind fuck.
And as governor, how much of that blows back on you when you go to run for governor again, you know? Like, I assume he still has his job as governor, but for how much longer?
I could have done with him out without... I think this still would have worked and maybe worked better if he wasn't so sleazy behind the scenes. Like, if he was still more well-meaning, but just Frank outmaneuvers him and puts him in these traps. I thought that would have been more interesting, but, you know, whatever. By the time Conway is, like, threatening to smack around his wife and kids, I'm like, okay, I can see. And really, all he did is lose his cool and blow up at him.
Yeah, he shouted once at his kids, and he called his wife weak. Or insinuated that she was weak.
Yeah, I've blown up at my kid because I was too hot and sweaty after packing up a whole bunch of camping gear.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I didn't have a 4-star general.
And it doesn't make me think that he's a bad father or a bad husband necessarily. It just makes me think this is all getting to him.
It somehow humanized him, honestly.
Right.
Like, okay, this is like...
Because he isn't all just slick smiles and plotting, you know?
Sure. So I've gone like kind of back around with him. Let's talk about this Amani guy. He's played by this guy named Farshad Farahad. And he had a bit part in that Ben Affleck movie, not Syriana. What the hell was that movie?
I know which one you're talking about. With the U.S. Embassy and shit.
If something, go fuck yourself.
Where he's making a movie.
Yeah.
He's pretending like he's making a movie.
It's the name of the fake movie. God damn it. It's Go Fuck Yourself, because that's what the guy says.
Yeah, no,
Argo,
it is.
Argo, Argo,
Argo,
Fuck Yourself.
Fuck Yourself, that's right.
I knew if I could get Go Fuck Yourself,
that's
I
your
could rally from there.
For everything.
I could fight off that hill. He had a bit part in that, and he's been in a few other things, but I thought he was, like, really cool, because my idea of him changed throughout the episode. Like, at first I thought, okay, well, he's this terrorist guy. Oh, he's the stereotypical, like, rich Saudi Arabian, well-educated, but it's been radicalized kind of guy. But it's like, it's even deeper than that. This guy, he was like a Ba'athist politician. So Ba'ath is the Saddam Hussein ruling party in Iraq. And so he's a Ba'athist functionary, just bureaucrat.
He's like, let's say he's a stamper. Let's compare him to Stamper.
He may not even be that bad. He might just be like their Department of Agriculture guy.
Sure. Compare him to Kathy Durant, somebody.
I wish they had gotten more specific about what, like, you know, was he involved in, like, the torture rooms, or was he just, like, literally, like, their Minister of Transportation or something, or maybe even the Undersecretary.
Right.
But they make this case that, like, you know, the United States came in, kicked in all of Iraq, and this is all matter of record, you know, dismissed the military, took out all the political apparatus, regardless of whether it was corrupt or what, and just, like, did the whole clean house and just essentially turned the power structure upside down. This guy's now odd man out, but as he points out, like, you know, he's a relative. That's the other thing. He's kind of too young to be who they said he was, but, you know, all him and his family have known from that point forward has been bombs and terror and death.
Yeah.
And it's like, maybe this guy was bad, maybe he wasn't, but after running it for your life for that long a time, it's radicalized him to the point to where, you know, Claire makes the fatal mistake of thinking that he is like her and he's just in it he just wants to be back in power. And if they give him that, and control of all of Iraq, that he'll be happy. And he's like, you know, there is what Iraq? There is no more Iraq. There's Sunni and Shia and Kurds, and I thought there's a lot of smart points here to the point where it's like, you know what? I don't want power. I want justice, and I want revenge.
Okay. He can do that. Sure.
And it's weird to be on the other side of that conflict and be like, he's got a point.
Right. I mean, it's something, you know, the general public doesn't get exposed to a lot. They kind of hear the talking points from the people in power in our country, the people who are making these decisions about the Middle East, and we just don't get another perspective on it.
Sure.
So.
And I'm not saying, like, the thing that complicates that is, you know,
terrorism.
Well,
is
yeah,
that the answer.
But on the other, you know, it's like I go back and forth and I try to be as even-handed as possible. I mean, like, we essentially, compared to these people, are like the aliens from War in the World.
Right.
We strike unseen from the sky, you know,
from the ground, I think, technically.
What?
Technically, we came. The war.
Well, I'm
war
talking
of
about
the world's
like
aliens.
Came
out of the ground.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Okay. Sure. But we flip it up the power structure upside down because that's what we do.
Right.
And like, you know, we're striking for, and they can't, and if they screw up once with their cell phones or emails, they're dead. I'm not saying that they have to resort to terrorism, but I can see where they're like, well, fuck it, we'll just start cutting people's heads off. And I don't know, because I don't want to excuse that and make moral equivalence.
Sure. No, I don't think you should. I mean, there's a lot of behavior on both sides that's reprehensible.
Right, right.
But
I mean,
we only see
America,
the one side telling us what's right.
When America revolted against the British, sure, the British were better equipped and better trained, et cetera, but it was the gap in power wasn't like War of the World style. It was like they had muskets, we had muskets. You know, they might have had more training and use them, but then again, they wore bright red uniforms, et cetera. It's hard to talk about morality in a situation where a region has been fucked by Western influence for 100 years, and it's kind of an artificial deal. And I, you know, there's values
and
gap.
I certainly
culture
don't
gap.
Know enough about it to talk about it intelligently. So
no, but I think it's interesting that this show is kind of touching on those things and not being real. It's like, again, I don't feel like they're setting their thumb on any one area. It's kind of like, this is the way it is. And having the Underwoods be kind of amoral allows them to stand outside the traditional, like, good versus evil power structure and just say, this is just the picture of what the world is.
Yeah, and it's it's easier to do that, I guess, with multiple perspectives from yeah. from all these characters.
Yeah.
You know, you're not necessarily making a statement about something when you create a character that has an idea about something.
Well, the other layer of abstraction is that there's this fantasy world that the United States is actually a terror state under the grip of a madman.
Right.
I mean,
absolutely.
Like, it's like
what he says at the end.
The worst things that they say about us in the Middle East in mm-hmm. the House of Cards universe are true.
Right.
That we're cynically using freedom and democracy the way that we accuse them of using a religion of peace, Islam, uh-huh. to hold the world in our thrall. And I think that's like, that's kind of interesting. And the fact that it's just all, you know, all pretend allows you to kind of think of that without too much judgment.
Yeah. I mean, ideas do have power, and the people who are in a position to wield that power will use them to their own ends.
That said, I imagine that there's a type of person who would watch the show and just be apocalyptically pissed off and furious about the various depictions of a lot of different things. But then again, I imagine those people stopped watching somewhere in season one.
Probably.
So, anyway... What else?
There's so much to talk about with the story.
That's
the
what I'm saying. Like
I
kind of went down this terrorism plot hole, but I just again was super impressed with the way. And I started off this season with the thesis, like, you know, maybe they're better when they do small scale stakes with it's all just kind of political points and all that. Here we're talking about total war, something even more preposterous than the Chinese and Russian situation, but it feels. It feels like it's hanging together better, and they're actually making a point that is cogent and I understand.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I don't know how to like what to put my finger on there and say this is the reason, but
or maybe it's just like right. It's like they're going full ass. This isn't half ass. Like the stakes, they're just all in on the stakes of this. Whereas before, it's like, so if we don't get this dam in China, what happens? Walker gets embarrassed, and Frank isn't happy, and. If the Russian guy kisses Claire, does that mean it's World War III?
It's only like, season three. I know we got at least one more to
do. Like, the stakes is this gay guy that's in prison in Russia, and that's horrible, but it's not total brutal war, you know?
Right.
So I don't know. Maybe it's just a raising of the stakes to preposterous levels is given to show the freedom to shine, but man, I thought it was really good.
Can I ask you why the hell, when you're filming when you're sending out a live-streamed video to the terrorist trying to have them stand down and release this other hostage, you wouldn't have a fucking interpreter in the room.
That's dumb. That's
Claire doesn't have someone who can verify what he's saying.
I don't understand.
Or at least the other end of the conversation is saying, because you can't make them talk in English.
And that's the thing. Like, 30 seconds later, we get the translation on TV.
Right.
So why not have a translator in a room so you don't have the vice...
It made her look real dumb.
The vice president and the president in his situation room, no one speaks Farsi? Really? You're on the phone with these guys who speak it like Nate and... Uh-huh. Seriously?
And you know there's going to be a conversation.
And that's what I'm saying. It's like, if it was a plot point that we need to keep what he said secret for 15 minutes of showtime, fine. But 30 seconds later, translating for us, it just seemed like it made him look dumb. And I get it. It's like, well, you can't. But the fact that it was happening in the president's situation room and they've been talking to these guys for days, like, I just thought it was a little farcical that they didn't have someone that could speak the language.
Yeah.
Totally agree.
I don't know what else we want to talk about with the terrorist plot stuff.
Can we talk about Seth?
I'm desperate to talk about
how
Seth.
How Seth is in what, like, a very personalized hell.
Mm-hmm.
Just, like, a solitary confinement version of hell. And it's just his whole this guy is acting as if Seth is having a out-of-body experience the entire episode. Like, his eyebrows are above his hairline.
During...
His face is ashen and gray. He just is really taking a bunch of punches here.
He is. It's thing after thing. And he's already kind of on his heels a little bit.
Sure.
With, you know, just the press down his neck on this whole thing. And this Hammer story comes out. And it visibly crushes the man. Like, he yells at Stamper... For totally correct reasons. Like, I have to say, you can sit in your office and you can do nothing and say nothing. I have to get up on that fucking stage.
Yeah, what's it say on my name? Oh, press secretary? Oh, that means I have to get out and talk to the shambling horde.
This is the worst, maybe the worst job in all of DC.
You have to be in all of politics. You have to be like a psychopath to do it. Like, you just have to not give a shit, and you have to not take any of it personally, and you just have to be the mouth of Sauron, or, you know,
right.
Whoever, I mean, if you're the villain, I guess. But I don't.
Can the press secretary be prosecuted for lying?
That's a damn good question.
Because I imagine he has to lie a lot.
Sure.
Because he's got to stay on message with whatever the president wants.
Plus, he probably knows a lot of things that you just can't say, like national security type stuff.
Right, and I feel like a lot of times he'll say, I can't comment on that, you know,
right.
National security or whatever other reason.
I would think that you can't prosecute him for lying as long as, because there's the House Armed Services Committee and the intelligence. As long as you're straight with those oversight committees, I don't think there's much you can tell the American. I mean, shit, cops can lie to you to bust you for a dime bag of weed.
Right.
If the president of the United States can't lie to the American citizens for the greater good, again, as long as the proper oversight committees are engaged, and that's a big fucking if,
yeah.
Then I don't see how you can have a problem with it, because you literally can't do the stick side of the government unless you're operating from some kind of secrecy.
It's true, yeah. But, man, Seth, this episode,
And he went from the guy who's like, what are you going to do, shove a glass down my throat last episode, to just deer in the headlights, full-time shitting pants. It's really entertaining.
During second Bush's term, wasn't there a press secretary who quit?
Talking about Ari Fleischer, he did resign to spend more time with his wife and family, but there was also a lot of controversy about, you know, do you remember the Valerie Plame scandal about Bush administration outing a CIA agent,
yes,
blowing the cover for potentially political reasons, and like who leaked it, and was it Cheney or was it this Richard Armitage guy? And I don't know the full story on that, but
I just remember around the time there were a lot of hard questions coming at this guy.
Sure.
And then he resigned, and I was like,
sure.
Ooh, that doesn't look good.
Sure. Yeah, I don't know, but I remember that too.
But I expect at some point Seth might just go out the window or at least quit.
Sure. Yeah.
If I were him, I would be considering it.
Indeed. Indeed.
Actually, I probably would have already done it. Seth has a pair on him.
What
for
is
sure.
Sure. Yeah. Although I think they've fallen off on this episode. What did you think about this thing between the data douche Aiden and the NSA, CIA, FBI?
Right.
Because the second watch, it really drove home to me that if they had to thrown him out of the building, they might have gotten the house correct.
Maybe so.
Which ironically wouldn't have left Francis the option to go to war, but it's probably, I mean, you can already see the next shoe. We got like Frank is a fucking octopus. He's got eight shoes. Six of them have dropped. The next one is going to be this wiretap scandal.
Yeah.
Because the NSA, FBI, and CIA got their hands all the way up inside that operation with this Aiden guy unable to defend them. But again, one of the interesting things about the show is they show kind of a consequence of that, which is the professional analyst wanting to concentrate on the cell phone tower triangulation, him wanting to go deeper and like, let's do the background and do the songbird and the pygmy magpie, Charlie's Angels strategy, which might have worked because they got the wrong house, which really left Frank no place to go other than to war.
Well, it kind of left him with that option, and I think
that's what I'm
him.
Saying. Like, yeah. There's all these unintended consequences that cut both ways and just plays and counterplays and stroke.
I like the way they're handling that.
Yeah.
And it's kind of always been the case, right? Like,
when it's at its best.
Yeah.
It's just rapid fire. Like, you're always aware of the plan, but you're also aware of when the plan goes off the rails and now what?
Yeah, you can see all of the gears turning.
And that's why the first three episodes, I think, were so unsatisfying.
Yeah.
Because that whole element that really makes this show hum was completely opposite. You had no idea what Claire was trying to do.
Yep.
You didn't agree with what Francis was trying to do and the way he was treating her. And it's like you just felt disconnected from everything. Whereas now, you know, I'm horrified by it all, but I'm super involved in what's happening on the show.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about Hammer and Frank, because they have some pretty great scenes together.
Oh, God, their scenes where they square off are some of the best in an already really great episode.
I agree. I want to ask you, you know, talk about some of the minutiae if you want, but I want to ask you, who do you think won that at the end of this episode?
I think Hammer.
I think Hammer won the conversation. I think Frank might have won the day with his Total War thing.
I think
that might actually have the desired effect of moving the spotlight.
Yeah, but it's going to be so... Because here's the other thing I saw. I saw Hammer saying, every passing moment has me starting to question my certainty of you not being a murderer. And then the way he was propped up on the wall as he's watching Frank's press conference on this war thing.
With a stink face that Michonne might envy.
He's like, essentially, motherfucker, Mr. President, I'm going to come after you. I'm going to put this country on my shoulders and on my typewriter, and I'm going to save it.
I think...
And that's
Frank has used war to win the battle, but he did not win the war yet.
No.
And I think he's in serious trouble because you're right. I think Hammer's digging his heels in now.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like
he spun the hammer around. He's using the claw part of it.
He's gone from hammer to claw. I don't know how Frank gets out of this. Like, the scandal already... Like, going to war, and there's some interesting, because, like, some of this I feel like is a little Bush-era commentary. Some of it is, like, Clinton-era, because that's something that Clinton was always accused of. Someone gave him a blowjob. Oh, it's lob a cruise missile. Uh-huh. And, you know, way to get everybody's back mind on me being presidential. And
sure.
Then how kind of politically calculated some of his wars and getting out of wars and refusing to go into wars are. And, you know, there's the whole Mogadishu and Rwanda and lots of stuff you could talk about. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was kind of a nod towards that presidency, which I thought was interesting.
Okay.
It's always been interesting that, like, it's weird that this is a... It seems to me, as I'd like to call myself a radical moderate, it seems to me that this television is largely pitched to liberals... And they cast a Democrat to do a lot of what they would consider stereotypical Republican tactics.
All right, yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
And I always thought that was weird. I guess
to kind of be the bad guy, too.
Yeah. I guess that, like, making a Democrat gives them cover to be like, well, you know, we're playing fair, but I don't know. It's the meta politics of this show, I think, are fascinating.
Yeah, so going back real quickly to this battle between Hammer and Frank, Frank admits to Hammer that he was leaking stuff about the health bill to Zoe. He admits a couple of things that looked fairly bad.
But also, you as the uber arch journalist published it without question.
Well, he had corroborating sources, didn't he?
No, but I'm talking about Zoe's original stories were just her source. And Hammer was, and that hit the mark because we know. And probably Frank suspected that Hammer did not like that. He was kind of like, he didn't like Zoe, and he didn't like this new
journalism. He was constantly asking, like, what are your sources? I need to know this information. And Zoe Strongarm.
And also, I forget Janet, the woman's name. The one that runs the paper.
Oh, yeah, I don't remember.
What I'm getting at is that this guy had serious misgivings, and he didn't do his job, and he's probably got a little pangs of guilt that if I did do my job completely and hadn't slept on this, what could we have avoided in this country? But
right, so what are the leads that go back to Frank? And we talked a little bit about this in last episode. Stamper. I mean, that's really it, right? I mean, he can't prove murder without Stamper.
Well, but what I think is interesting is how close did he get to winning Hammer? Because I thought this scenario he laid out where I tried to help the president, but he was a weak president. He was trying to put this milquetoast to Secretary of State. I put in Kathy Durant. That's something everyone agrees is better. He was doing this education bill. I had to kill it to save him. Like, I felt he almost won the day.
Mm-hmm.
And then, in fact, I was kind of like 50-50. What did you think when Frank said, do you trust your instincts? Look into my eyes.
I thought he might actually get a moment where Tom agreed. Okay.
He's like, okay. I don't think you're lying. And I did too. But then when Hammer said, he goes, is any of this on record? He goes, do you believe me? He says, not a word. And he's like, yes. Because maybe Hammer is the equal.
Maybe.
That we've been wanting, you know.
I think he's the good guy. I think he's really one of the few good guys in this whole scenario. Jackie and Remy are coming around, but took him long enough.
It would be cool to see a story where the journalist, you know, it's been a long, it feels like it's been a long time since the, you have a story where the journalist is the good guy.
Like because, The Wire?
Nah, well, but they also had The Fabulist. That it was, The Wire is essentially right. Everything
Some
sucks.
Of the journalists were bad. Right?
Every institution sucks. Yeah. Save yourself. Save your neighbor if you can. Which is, you know, that's a whole other kettle of fish. But this country needs better journalists and better journalism. And
I agree.
There can't be anything bad coming from, like, glorifying, really gritty, hard-hitting, old-school journalism.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So, I like it.
People may call me a Luddite for that, but I don't think Twitter is the best place for journalism.
I think it's just, I think it's great, and it's definitely got some force multiplier, but I do feel like it's made a lot of people lazy.
It's a different thing.
And also chasing headlines, which leads to sloppy, and which never, I mean, that's the super interesting thing about Serial, which another episode just dropped today, and like I'm totally on board. In fact, I'm thinking about doing something on lunch where I just say, you know what, everyone should listen to the last three episodes, and if you think it's complete bullshit, then you don't have to listen to anything else. But if you want to dig deeper, you can go. But they wasted so much time with the minutia of this Bo Bergdahl that I felt like she really buried the lead, and now no one's listening to this fascinating autopsy of failures on both sides of the American government to do things properly over the course of like 15 years and two different administrations.
Okay.
It's just a compounding political fiasco, and it says something really important about government and politics. But, you know, like that's – this journalism is essentially unwinding all these facts that happened in the last 15 years and go past the initial reports that hardly anybody goes back to update, and no one remembers it. Like, oh, that initial report was bullshit. We now know the truth, but everyone still just remembers the sensational bullshit because that's the stuff that gets 24-hour coverage.
Yeah.
The retraction and the actual truth gets buried, you know, on page 7.
By an avalanche of other shit.
Yeah, it gets buried under the next thing that we're reporting live off of Twitter and whatnot.
Right.
But I don't know.
I do have to say about this story, it is a godsend for Conway. I mean, sure. I don't know if this war thing is actually going to work out in season 5, but regardless, he didn't have a campaign going into this. And with that story, he knew he was back in it. And he was pretty confident he'd have the White House.
I think that's a super fun thing about this, too, because it seems like so many times these campaign races go back to gotchas that happened 15, 20, 30 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Whereas this is like they're both kind of but that's the thing. Like you're saying Conway should thank God. But on the other hand, the story came out that he lied about strong-arming the Senate Intelligence Committee.
That's what I mean. Like, as much as the war might steal focus from Frank's story, Frank's story is still focused from his.
But what I'm saying is, like, America, it seems like this fictional version of America is definitely, it's a douchebag turd sandwich situation.
Right, can we just throw them all out? They're all liars, they're all crooks, can we just toss them all out and start over?
Can we go back and have another primary?
Yeah.
Because this is bullshit. I don't like either. They're both liars. Like, it's rare. You usually have a honeymoon period where it's like, okay, the new guy, he's got like 100 days before you realize, oh, he's a bastard.
He's
like
not
all the
doing
others.
Anything he promised on the campaign trail.
This, you're just getting it. You're not even to the general election yet.
Yeah.
It's pretty nuts. Pretty nuts.
But if he ever had a chance at all, I feel like that story helped him. And I'm curious to see if the war can take enough away from Frank's scandal to give Frank another shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also thought it was really entertaining to see Claire and Frank doing all these, you know, God, what we had done differently. My mind's racing. Could we have done things differently? Could we have kept some people closer? And I'm like, who? Like, maybe pick two or three people and we're like, all right, these are key people got to rely on. We're never going to lie to them and we're never going to betray them. There's not a single, like, not even each other.
Yeah.
That's and people are like, well, Doug, no, fuck no, Doug. They like large. Yeah. I think it's hard to argue that Frank didn't kind of throw him under the bus most of last season. Meacham, like he passed Frank's bullshit lie detector. He had been thrown under the bus. There's nobody
right
that they wouldn't and couldn't lie to on this show, even each other. And that's why they're getting destroyed.
But it's also why it's so effective when Tom sees through it all. You know,
sure.
He's because Frank is so good at lying. and he can make people who even know what he's up to realize his shit.
That's why I thought that scene
with Hammer.
That scene with him and Hammer is so good because Frank was doing his best work. Like, you know, he's talking about, I had fax now. You want to see fax? There's my liver, and this is you got this fax from Lucas. Hammer is a man because he, like, and I get this is all scripted television.
Obviously, yeah.
But in universe, this guy stands toe to toe with a really menacing president of the United States giving him all he can give, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
it's amazing. Just both performances are great. I love both of these characters.
Right. I mean,
they are.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I feel like if a random cop just stopped me on the street and started hassling me, I'd start sweating bullets and sweat all my pits out. And I'm a white dude that doesn't go around with guns or drugs or anything. It's just like the fact that you got the president screaming at you.
And that's the other thing, too. I don't know that I've ever seen him yell.
When
he throws the papers, the report at Seth, and yells at him.
Yes. Screams.
I've heard him, like, fill his lungs and really speak loudly to someone. But
yeah, like, use his dad voice.
He fucking yelled. He was screaming at Seth here. And it was surprising.
Yeah.
Because I can't recall seeing him before.
And also, like, I feel it's weird. What do you think of that, Frank? How did this happen? Like, do you really need to be explained to you? It's fairly self-evident how this happened.
Yeah, all your chickens are coming home to roost, man.
Yeah.
You can only lie to people for so long.
Yeah.
I mean, you eventually tell so many lies that your lies are contradictory, and then you've got serious problems.
Yeah, you can lie to some of the people some at a time, but you've forgotten that in the last 4 years or so. I don't know. I thought it was really cool, and I thought also the way they made it seem like Hammer might be swallowing this. Because his reactions were, like, when Frank was kind of admitting to some of this stuff, and his kind of realizations, like, it was played like, oh, man, this is scoring major blows against Hammer.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, I guess they're going to put the snooze button on this, and we'll, you know, it'll come back around with all the murder stuff next. No, Hammer's on the case.
So we didn't really talk about it with Aiden, I don't think. He's got this algorithm that he doesn't want people to get a hold of because
the spoon.
You know, it's a spoon.
Sure. Spin up his ass a few times, let's be real.
if they can get some records that might indicate what he's been doing with the spoon, no one's gonna like this. Least of all him, because I think his ass is on the line, right? Because
he stirred Frank's coffee after it was in his ass.
but that has not come to fruition yet. I feel like there's more to go.
That's
with that.
That's the seventh shoe.
Yeah.
The eighth shoe is the murders.
Stamper and the murders, yeah.
Yeah. And there might be a ninth shoe, which is the nuclear dirty bomb.
And we didn't really talk about Stamper and the liver lady.
Well, yeah. I don't think I feel like I'm near done discussing it, but yeah, let's talk about the liver lady. This is Stamper's third shoe. He's got Rachel. He's got his alcoholism, which is barely kept in check. That's shoe number one.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel, shoe number two. Liver lady finding out that he killed Liver Man.
Yep.
That's shoe number three. And again, he's got this super inappropriate. I guess he's going to move in with this woman.
Was that the implication here?
She said, I don't know where you're going to go, and I don't know when you're going to come back, but when you do, you're going to stay here.
Oh, my God. This is the worst. Not from a storytelling perspective. I'm fine with it. Just...
No, yeah, you're right.
God. Oh, this character, this lady has no idea what she's getting into with Stamper.
But it is his history, like we talked about last podcast.
Oh,
He likes to find these fucking albatrosses and develop a psychosexual dependence on them.
Right. And that's why I say it's not bad. It's well within his character. It's just... I hate to see him going down that road again. And especially with a woman, like, she's oblivious.
She seems so nice.
Yeah.
I mean, thank God. Like, the only thing that makes me less skeeved out is all of her kids are, like, old teenagers. So it's like...
Okay, yeah.
Although they just lost their dad.
Right.
Like, I'm not saying they're not vulnerable, but, like, at least they're not 3 and 5. Mm-hmm. You got this lizard man coming in to destroy your life. Yeah, that's going to be...
But I still think the breadcrumbs back to Frank are going to happen through this relationship.
Probably.
I can't see any other way.
Because there's your ninth shoe, the fact that Frank killed a man to get his liver.
Sure.
Of course, that's not
he didn't
Frank.
Really do that. Yeah,
it's not but him. That's the thing. Like that detail will be lost in
right.
the torrent of shit that's going to come out of Hammer's keyboard,
uh-huh.
or not his keyboard, his typewriter, his manual typewriter.
Oh yeah,
Hammer doesn't
doing
use a word
shit.
Processor.
Yeah.
let's see what else we want to talk about. How about the FBI strike team? I thought that was really fucking cool.
Yeah, looked good.
I mean, I didn't know that the FBI had like an elite hostage rescue team, but of course they do.
Yeah.
And it looked super professional and like super, like I liked their uniforms, their camo, their gear. Like I felt like I was watching a very professional team take down this target to no end.
Right.
To no avail, but I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I was noticing like little things. I don't know why I noticed this, but like
because you played Counter-Strike a lot.
I did, and right, like that shield
yeah.
thing, that's straight out of Counter-Strike.
Sure.
But when they run up to this house, like first of all, yeah, their camo's pretty good. They run up to this house, and
seems
you can
like
see them
work
all
in
line
an urban
up.
Environment as well as for, like I feel like there's a lot of research about what's the perfect camo for anything you need in America,
right? Is it snowing? No? Okay. Go in black.
Right.
Go in this dark gray black thing.
Yeah.
But the way they run up to the building, and you can see them all kind of spin, like turn around and line up, none of them touches the building. Whether they're wearing a pack of like an 80-pound bulky-ass pack, they all are on their mark, and it's just like the filming of that makes me really believe that I'm in the moment here with them.
Yeah.
It was well done. But
yeah,
so much of the show is you
sure,
know?
And like I imagine that the real FBI team is like that, and it shows like, and you know, I think it's funny that every bumfuck county in America has a SWAT team now.
Oh God!
And I'm like, unless you're these guys, and these are kind of the stakes, I don't think you should be able to maybe call yourself that and have the equipment and the tanks and all, you know,
right?
Like these guys, I can tell they're professional, they're well trained, they know what they're doing. The dudes that just, you know, I don't know what the qualifications for be the bumfuck county SWAT team, but I bet it's willing to wear mall ninja shit and shoot military grade rifles and say fuck yeah while you're doing it, essentially.
I mean, I'm not going to go that far. I just think every town in America doesn't need a fucking SWAT team.
That's the other side of it.
I think we need a centralized sort of thing where, you know,
a regional.
Regional thing. Yeah,
big cities.
Yeah,
New York,
Indianapolis,
LA. Fucking Cincinnati might need a SWAT team.
Right, but you don't need to bust them out every time you...
Bumfuck County.
You drive down to bust a pot dealer.
Sure, exactly. Or to serve a warrant or whatever you're using them for.
Right.
Now. What else we want to talk about?
I think that's about it for
me. How about the... I thought the Hammer had a choice title for his report. The Underwood's Crooked Path to the White House.
Yeah, I like it.
That's
Doesn't
poetry.
Seem sensationalist. It just seems well-written.
Oh, the other thing, Frank's liver ongoing plot point.
That's right.
Is Frank's liver just let go and that's what ends him?
It's become sentient. It's clawing its way out.
It's the Walter White cancer. It's the like the time bomb that's overshadowing everything.
Could be.
There was a brief scene of Remy and Jackie very happy to, you know, I don't even know why they threw it in. Like, the way we left them last episode, I felt like they were going to give the statement and then go fuck off into the sunset.
I think we'll see them again.
I don't know why we would.
Yeah.
Unless it's Doug going to stamp them.
Right. Maybe now's a good time to transition into our overall thoughts about the season because...
Well,
we need to talk about Willimon and kind of this being the punctuation.
Well,
of
his we also didn't really reign. Talk about. We talked about the plan, but we didn't really talk about the emotion of the scene of him giving.
Oh,
this
the
speech
the
and the
addressing the nation, yeah.
And how I thought it's one of the best Frank Underwood speeches.
It's good,
but it's also complete bullshit. I thought it was interesting
because it's written by Yates. He's a good writer.
I thought it was interesting, Kathy Durant seeing completely through it. That's got to be like shoe number 10, that your Secretary of State cannot wait to betray you.
Right, but she's also tied up in this, right? Like, so that's, she kind of hitched her wagon to him in a way. I don't remember.
I mean, I honestly don't remember,
but she said it.
But that's a thing, like, at some point, a person's patriotism, if you have any patriotism at all, and you're seeing this... You know, there again, why I don't think conspiracies work. Like, there's a got to be someone in the room that's like, this isn't right. I can't live with this. Someone's got to know the truth. And you Kathy so. Seems like she's that person.
Yeah.
Maybe so. And she's got her eyes wide open on this. The other thing I thought was interesting is that Claire seems like she has shifted her elite. Well, I mean, it's never she shifted it off to Tom, but Tom's being froze out as a result of this.
Well, she's got other things on her plate.
Is that what was happening? Does she just knows that there's no fucking way that Tom will go along with any of this stuff?
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
And Tom's a smart guy, too.
Right. He'll probably figure it out.
Tom was in a room seeing this guy get his throat slit, mm-hmm. and he was one of the few in the room that didn't look away.
Because I
thought that was interesting, too. When I was watching, I was like, it's like everybody almost instantly, as soon as the throat got slit, looked away. Tom kept going for 5-6 seconds before he just, like, you know, looked away in disgust.
This is some serious Scorpio shit.
Frank and the First Lady maintained the gaze the entire time.
Yes, they do. They turn the sound off because nobody needs to hear that. But
well, them chanting whatever they're chanting.
Right.
But I thought that was really fascinating. And then what did you think of the Underwoods joining? Like, Frank broke the fourth wall,
mm-hmm.
but Claire stared right at us.
She saw him speaking. She stared at us. Yeah, they broke the fourth wall together there for the first time.
Arguable, or are you just making a statement?
I think that's true. I think the
because you could because argue that she normally, just looked at him to look at him and then looked at us because she was looking ahead. But no, I
but
definitely
normally
thought
nobody
she caught
changes
my gaze.
Their expression at all when Frank is speaking. Right? They'll kind of like do a and freeze sort of thing while Frank speaks. But
sure.
Here he started speaking. She looks over at him like she's paying attention. Then she looks back.
I felt like she had my gaze.
Yeah. And it portrays unity, right?
Yeah. I mean,
that's what you want in that moment. They have become the ultimate evil White House couple. They're now inextricably linked.
Claire starts monologuing into the camera next season. Are you in on that?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. I don't have a big, like, I would have said up until this moment, I would have thought that was a gimmick. But now I'm kind of on board with them doing the gaze.
Okay.
The Underwood gaze, the Care Bear stare. Trying to think if there's anything else we want to talk about. What did you say you wanted to talk about our overall thoughts on season 4?
Yeah, and like what we think might be in store for season 5, because it's interesting. We're left in a pretty serious location here with the departure of Willimon, Bo Willimon, the show creator.
Sure. And he didn't, yeah.
So,
didn't really tie things off neatly with the Bo either.
No, but I feel like he may have put kind of a stamp on who Frank is, who the Underwoods actually together are, and what kind of relationship they're going to have.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because I don't know that you can go back from this, right?
Sure.
It's kind of all or nothing here, and that's what he wants to say about Frank and about Claire. Also, with Remy and Jackie kind of getting their final moment together, I think that is actually their final moment, and that's how he intended, just... We're going to go out like this.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're going to do in season 5. Maybe they bring him back. Maybe Frank and Claire split up again. Who the fuck knows? But as far as Willimon's concerned, I felt like he put a lot of finality into the relationships and the state of these characters.
And also set a trajectory for season 5.
Certainly, yeah.
Like, you know, most of the seasons we've come away with like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen. You know, with like, well, I wonder how these scandals are going to blow up in his face. But here it's like, we know exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah.
There's going to be this Frank trying to push this war to drown out all the scandal around him.
And you don't necessarily know if it's going to work. You have other questions, but
sure,
you're right. There is a course set. And I feel like it's pretty firmly set.
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, what did you think of the season overall? I know you said the first chunk was not great.
I thought the first three episodes were better, already better than season 3.
Right.
Which we both had a fairly low opinion of.
Mm-hmm.
But still kind of like, man, it really is, it's lacking a lot of lifeblood. And Frank's assassination attempt was a brilliant way to just set this thing on cruise, and it did. It just barreled down the highway. I was very satisfied. found it hard to not want to, you know, just go keep binging ahead. If it wasn't for this podcast, I probably would have finished it in one weekend.
Right. Yeah.
Whereas season three, I think I would have been like, maybe wait till tomorrow and then maybe get busy playing video games and wait the next day.
Maybe I'll just binge it before season four comes out.
Sure.
Right. I largely feel the same way. I think episode four on was just balls to the wall. It was great.
I felt like it's back to being really ripped out of the headlines. And they, you know, a lot of that's luck. I think it's back to being very watchable, and it's just a damn shame because everybody, it seems like all the important people have given up on this show. You know, like there's just not as much critical buzz, and there's a lot of people are off after last season, and it's a shame because that's the other thing. It's like, you know, our reaction when we heard, oh, renewed for season four and five was like giant eye rolls.
Right.
And, you know,
I don't know if I feel that way anymore.
I mean, whoever takes over from Bo Willimon could fuck things up. Right. But you could say the same thing about Daredevil season two, which we're about to start tomorrow. This Friday. They had a showrunner that took over from another showrunner, and they got two new showrunners for this season.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that it's necessarily a death knell for a series. It just depends on, you know, who's going to be hired to replace them and what their experience is and how much they care about the story. And because the style of the show is on lock, you know?
I mean, the cinematography,
you could bring back any one of these directors and they're going to know how to film this. It's not like, I mean, it'd be much harder to, it'd be much harder to do this if like he was replaced after the first or second season. Well, I don't even know because like you get David Fincher in here and he just films it the way he set the blueprint, right?
Right. From everything aesthetically, I think we'll see in season five.
Yeah.
I think the only real question is going to be, what are they going to do for the story, for the writing? I'm definitely more excited than I expected to be for season five, given what I had heard about the change of authority here between Willimon and whoever, and also coming off of season three, which was not great.
Sure. The other thing I want to ask you, we talked about this a little bit off camera. Have you, because there was this statement made that like the president wanted everyone in America to see this guy's head sawed off. Have you seen any of the, because there's various videos of people getting their head sawed off
right.
That you can watch on the internet. Have you seen one?
Nope, never. Don't care to.
I've seen one. And it was pretty much this logic. Like, if you're going to have a strong opinion on foreign policy or whatever, you, not that it should sensationalize or emotional, but like I feel like it's you can't pontificate or that's always going to be a weakness if you said, well, I haven't actually seen as bad as it get, or I haven't stared at the face of the enemy or anything like that. And I've seen the other. I've seen like, you know, gun camera footage of people getting blown away by airstrikes and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recommend it.
I don't think that's a fair argument, but whatever.
No,
can imagine a lot
because that's the thing. Like, it didn't change my opinion one way or another, and I just like
right.
It's just a very unpleasant visual that got stuck in my head now.
Right, right.
But I do wonder what the effect of everyone in America seeing something like that.
It certainly would inspire fear, I'd imagine. Because this is just a random family, right? This is not anybody important that they've taken hostage.
Well, and it's not like, because, you know, you always hear it's like, oh, someone got to, well, it's, you know, what the hell were you doing over there? This is like, yeah, you're just minding your business in West Virginia, and surprise, you get snatched up.
Going to spend the week in Gatlinburg, boom.
Yeah,
all of a sudden,
this could happen to anyone or for any reason at any time. I don't know. It's
because nobody understands statistics either. So
sure.
That's not an argument.
Right. No, I just thought that was an interesting thing that you kind of like you're not trying to win their hearts, you're attacking their hearts. And,
yeah.
You know, for that, as soon as they made that decision, poor Mr. Miller, he was dead.
Yeah, for sure.
So, I don't know. That's the last thing I wanted to say. Jim?
Yeah.
I'm tired of trying to win these people's wallets.
Okay.
It's time to attack fear.
Attack the wallet.
Total. Brutal. Club. Bald move. Calm.
I'm glad you didn't go one word for each of those, because that would have taken a while.
total brutal club fear bald. We've got this club thing. It's a like swanky mm-hmm. little rat pack lounge. You go to club.baldmove.com. It's for as little as $1 a month. You get at least 6 extra podcasts a month. You get all of the spoiler-filled first-run Bald movie reviews. Or next week we're going to be doing Batman versus Superman. Mm-hmm. Sure to be a laugh riot. We got some extra video game playthroughs, some bonus content, like our Quit Your Pitching stuff that you can download. You can get the first one for free to kind of try before you buy. So lots of stuff. Ad-free podcasts. Mm-hmm. Lots of stuff. Lots of, and we priced it to be fan-friendly. We really need and want your support, and we try to make it as easy as possible to do so by going to club.baldmove.com. If you like these extra podcasts, like it's without a doubt in my mind, we wouldn't be doing House of Cards right now if it wasn't for the existence of the club and people supporting it. And because, back when we had our full-time jobs, one podcast a week, maybe you could do two.
Maybe
we'd do Better Call, but there's no way. House of Cards has gotten the bump. So if you're listening to this and enjoying it and wants to keep on some of this nichier stuff, please consider supporting us at club.baldmove.com, and we appreciate all those that do. Do you want to get to feedback?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Jimmy C. says, to be quite honest, season 3 had me anticipating little desire to binge this all the way through in one setting. Just a couple, just a taste. Let's say, yeah, I know, I'll stop after the first 4. I say this in the most endearing way possible. I have little difficulty believing some slimy, grimy, no-good, rotten nincompoops from Netflix somehow anticipated, perhaps by wading through countless gigs of Google metadata for last year's fan reactions, that placing the assassination attempt at the exact moment in a season where it would ensure that viewers are ensnared into eagerly binging the remaining 8.5 episodes.
Oh, yeah.
Man alive, that caught me off guard. I'm not the keenest in predicting where a show will lead from one episode to the next, but they certainly disguised that one very well. I assume they are once again highlighting the uniqueness of Frank and Meacham's relationship, the complete control contrasting with undying loyalty. The sequence leading up to quote-unquote it actually rustled my jimmies for a moment. We've seen this before, I get it. You share the secret history, okay? Now you're making hand turkeys on the wall of the White House. Quick, Meacham, shoot Frank a passionate gaze, draping your eyes knowingly on his for a brief second longer than you should. Hurry, we need more lustful ambiguity to continue matching Fincher's suspenseful lighting. Mainly it was Meacham's screen time while Frank was speaking at the university that made me scratch my head. I think it's absolutely amazing that they were able to make me feel almost uncomfortably confused, and less than a minute later, the show pulls off something that not only explains away my brief skepticism, but leaves me bowing to the writer's every whim while enthusiastically drinking the remainder of the season with no regard for human life. This guy's got a Yates-ish way of words, I tell you.
Yeah.
I'm impressed there weren't any leaks regarding this, at least none that I saw. I'm not the type that actively avoids spoilers by installing Chrome or Firefox add-ons or defriending anyone with loose lips for ruining experience. In fact, I've grown tired of the spoiler police admonishing anything and everything that's even remotely spoilerish, but this is an instance where I feel like spoilers would have absolutely ruined the effect it had on me. Whether Netflix succeeded in deceiving everyone else is still to be determined, but for now, all I have is my anecdotal appreciation for the job they've done at keeping me speechless. Maybe none of this makes sense. Maybe it wasn't that impressive and I just got wrapped up in a moment. I'm no Doug Stamper. I cannot maintain my edge after a half marathon viewing of Stamper's own tireless binge on life. At any rate, my appreciation for a 5th season has been impeached. See you next March. I thought this captured my feelings of going into this season pretty well. And also, you know me, I'm broadly pro-spoiler. I don't think it can really destroy an otherwise good piece of work, but I disagree. You really get fucked if you knew that Frank was going to be assassinated from the beginning.
Yeah, I definitely would not want to know that personally.
That's one of those rare twists that if you see it coming, it robs you of a lot of the effect.
Right. Yeah, I imagine Netflix, much like Aiden, has teams of people analyzing this data and saying, when we're creating our shows, we're not doing the standard like 3-act thing.
Yeah, what's the average first binge, initial binge?
Right. How long do people watch when a show comes out? Oh, they watch 2.5 episodes. They watch 4 episodes. They know exactly what that number is. where that curve tops out, and they put their moments there. I'm certain of it.
I will say this, though.
They'd be foolish not to.
And I've said this about a lot of Netflix shows, which has me increasingly scratching my head. This would have undoubtedly been better as a 12 or 10 episode season. Because those first three episodes, you need to have him and Claire hit rock bottom.
Yeah.
And you needed to set some of the political stage, but I don't think we needed three episodes of it.
Yeah, I'm with
and that's been my chief complaint about, you know, Jessica Jones, season one of Daredevil. Like, there was a couple episode stretch where they kind of lost, and I don't know why they're keeping the prestige drama 13 episode. Like, why? Why? They're
HBO's given that up a long time ago.
Well, I think they kind of, that's their preferred, and they kind of do it by budget and content and whatnot. But yeah, you're right. No,
they don't force it.
I don't know why Netflix, as much convention as they flaunt, wants to get this 13-episode thing going.
Maybe they have data that says this is the thing to do. This is the amount of time that people are willing to invest into something.
It's not for artistic purposes. I know that.
Right.
Like, maybe it's in the contract thing, and they're like, you know, this is the, you got to have these many episodes to get this much salary. I don't know.
Right, and then there's syndication. Are they going to do any of that on television? Like, do they want that overlap?
Yo, I could totally see House of Cards airing on.
Right, but in that case, they need a certain amount of episodes, they need certain lengths, or a certain number of seasons.
Yeah, I guess that's, you're right.
So maybe they're shooting for that.
I
don't know.
But to me, like, this would have been so much tighter if it was a 10. Like, I think 10 would have been where you need to be it just, like, complete. Like, this would have been one of the most compulsively watchable things ever. 12 would have been even just a 12-episode season would have been an immeasurable difference. And to be fair, there weren't any mammoth episodes. Like, Orange and the New Black goes 13 episodes, and then the last one's like 90 minutes or 2 hours long or something crazy like that. These were all 43 to 52-ish minutes. I think the longest one was like 57, and there's only one of those. So I feel like they've learned, because I felt like earlier seasons, the average episode is longer in length. But... Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why. I mean, episode length, it seems like anything more than an hour is going to be pushing your luck on a consistent basis, you know?
Uh-huh.
Because that's anti-binge, too. It's like, God damn, when's this episode going to end? I stayed up for one more, and now it's never ending. But I really don't understand why they do this 13-episode structure. Shall we move on?
Sure.
Dances with Wookiees has the alternate view.
It's a good name.
From Winnipeg. Maybe that's it. You just can't understand American politics from Winnipeg, man. I found this season to be garbage. Schlocky garbage.
What?
Moments of interest in between long stretches of really, really boring story. Hey, what do you know? Episodes 1 through 6 didn't matter, neither did the Frank versus Claire storyline. Plus, the show is so formulaic. Step 1, Frank Claire has a plan. Step 2, someone fucks with that plan and looks like they will lose. Step 3, something happens which delivers Frank and Claire a victory and puts in an even better position than before. Step 4, repeat. No matter what happens, nothing hurts them at all. That's a fair point. This show is pretty formulaic in that.
Like saying Frank has never been busted down.
And it's just it's literally that structure. They have a plan.
But it's life, man.
I know, yeah. I mean,
people put plans in motion. They either succeed or fail.
That's the show's story engine, and you have a problem with the story engine, is essentially what you're saying.
I guess if you don't like seeing the formula, maybe that bothers you. I don't care, as long as the content is interesting to me, and it is.
Could you say the same thing about, like, Breaking Bad?
Yeah, what would the engine
Walt
be
has
there?
A plan. Someone fucks with the plan. Walt emerges triumphant.
I mean, there's no conflict. There's no drama without conflict. And conflict, in a lot of instances, takes the form of obstacles in your path. I mean, that's what conflict is.
Well, I guess the thing about Breaking Bad is that, like, Walt usually manufactured all of his chances, whereas Frank is more of an opportunist. So it feels like it's luck. But, I mean, I feel like that's a lot of politics. Is you capitalize on your opponent's mistakes more than you actually do good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's you pounce on others when they fuck up rather than you just are a paragon of how whatever badass politician you are, which is depressing, right. But I think accurate.
I guess I just don't mind a formulaic story engine as long as the content is interesting and compelling.
Dances of Wookiees continues. Nothing ever changes. The show is boring. Just make Frank Emperor of America already. Really, I would love to end the show at the end of the show for it to be 30 years later and Frank is serving his 12th term in office for some reason that they, the people in this crazy fictional universe will accept. This is a dumb show pretending to be a sophisticated smart one. That's another criticism that I see people lay at this show a lot. Mm-hmm. And last year I would have agreed, and maybe this year I still agree, except for it's a lot more interesting and watchable.
Whatever, man. I'm not going to change your opinion on it. So I like the show. You don't like the show. We'll agree to disagree.
Okay.
I don't know what else to say on that, frankly.
I feel like the dumb show pretending to be a sophisticated smart one, that's kind of right on, because this show does do, like, I'm thinking even in our glory years, you had the I-O-U-D-E-A, you know, like,
But that was a man making a mistake. That wasn't the show making a mistake. I don't know. Yes, it has its moments of dumbness. I think all shows get a little stupid and go off the rails a bit, unless you're talking about like the best shows
the cream of the
ever
crop,
made.
Yeah.
But it also has its moments of glory, and I think that more than balances out the parts that I don't like so far.
Okay. Liz G said, I expected a finale that wrapped up the storyline. Frank would either be in or out of office. I watched The Good Wife, and the creators and writers, who are a husband and wife team, are leaving the show. They always knew that they wanted to do 7 seasons if they could. Originally, CBS was going to continue the show with other writers to take over. I was very happy when CBS decided to end the show instead. The creators have told their story and are ending it as they choose. It was a great run while it lasted and resulted in only a handful of dud episodes over 7 seasons of TV. Knowing that Willimon's leaving House of Cards, I expected a conclusion to his storytelling this season. Not getting it makes me think Netflix is stretching out House of Cards without the creator. I did read that Willimon has quote-unquote other projects that he will be working on. And while I enjoyed season 4 and will watch House of Cards next season, I hope the end is in sight. The show is close to being on too long. Frank needs to suffer for all the bad he has done. Frank and Claire need to be brought down and humbled.
Yeah, here's the thing. I never got that moment where I could be blissfully ignorant of a season 5 without Willimon, because I saw the news about that hand in hand.
Yeah, I wonder.
So, like, I didn't have that moment where I could be like, maybe he'll wrap it up this season.
Yeah,
just never happened.
Which
occurred.
Hurt the assassination plot line. But net, I wonder if it's a positive, because how much do you think we'd get our bitch on? Even though I think it wouldn't have changed our relative enjoyment of the season, but do you think we'd have gotten our bitch on if we were expecting this to be the final season, just like last season, and we get to the end, and this breaking the fourth wall seems a lot more gratuitous and bullshitty than, since we already knew the fifth season was coming, it's like, well, of course they're doing this way.
Yeah, they don't need to end it. Whereas we might have been expecting an ending.
And then not in like, God, how are they going to wrap this up? Oh, this is going to be a crazy episode, which it was, but not as crazy. Expectations are the things that kill you, man.
It's true. It's true.
So I guess I'm glad that even though I complained when the assassination storyline was happening, because there's no real tension there. You knew not only did it get renewed, but that Kevin Spacey got renewed as well.
Mm-hmm.
All in all, I'm kind of glad, because it let me relax and just enjoy the story for what it was rather than what I was expecting it to be.
Sure.
Liz continues to ponder, do you think that Frank thought that Doug was going to an AA meeting when he's going off to meet with the lizard lady? Or the liver lady.
Oh.
He's the lizard man, she's the lizard liver lady.
Yeah, I think Doug might be past his AA days.
Well, so what do you think he's... So if the president knew that he's had this relationship with the liver lady, there's no fucking way he'd approve of it.
Of course not.
And I also thought that was... This is something that Liz brought to my forefront that I actually had not really thought about, which is I thought it was kind of out of character for Doug to beg off seeing someone getting their throat slit and their head cut off. He wants to be with a liver. Huh. Now, that's something we also didn't talk about. So he obviously wants to be with a liver lady, but has he seen is his stomach full of blood and death?
Is his stomach full of blood and
death? Has he had his fill?
That's a good question. What have I seen of Stamper? Stamper's gotten... He's got people fighting back against him. Pushing back. He's being pushed away from Frank a bit.
While you're pondering that, the other thing I wanted to throw out there is, it's my understanding of the Alcoholics Anonymous branch of that of dealing with alcoholism that you never really graduate from meetings. You might not go as many times, but you're going to go at least like a once a month type of thing.
Right, because according to them, you're never not an alcoholic.
Well, not only that, but it's your, as a someone that's clean and sober, it's your responsibility to be a mentor and to sponsor other people and to be this, you know, it's like if you just bail as soon as you're healthy, then what the fuck? You're not paying back, and that's part of the process. So I don't think it's true that Stamper, that Frank would be cool with him just not going to AA meetings.
So you think he's using that as an excuse to go off and see Liver Lady?
I'm saying that I like Liz G's suggestion of same.
Okay.
I'm not saying I would think that, but I'm giving a nodding approval of her a suggestion here. She also says about
to be clear, I think Stamper would get his hands dirty. He just hasn't had much reason to lately. I don't think he's had his fill. I think he would still do it.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously he's still willing to cover someone's mouth with a cup.
Right.
But I don't know where his
brain. That was more like his job was on the line.
Yeah.
Like Seth is disregarding the things Stamper's telling him.
Yeah, I don't know how far he goes to protect Frank now. I mean,
I think he's still in. I think he's still loyal.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you say that Rachel is his, like, you know, Anakin to Darth Vader moment, Darth Vader still threw Palpatine off the, you know, down the reactor core.
Sure, I'm not saying they couldn't get there, but right now I think he's still loyal.
Frank asked him to kill the liver lady. I need her liver, Doug.
Just takes that whole family's livers, all of them, every single one down the line.
Have this entire family frozen. I might need the livers.
He doesn't even have that guy's liver. He's got a different liver. What? This guy just died for no reason.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right.
So that's
I fucked
extra,
up the whole plot.
Extra brutal.
She dropped some signs about Michael Kelly, the guy who plays Doug Stamper. We talked a bit about this last episode. I also heard him interviewed on an On the Media podcast. He mentioned that his real kids played his niece and nephew in season 3 when his brother on the show came to help Stamper when he's released from the hospital. That's kind of a cool touch. And she said that he seemed relaxed and very entertaining during the interview, which is what my takeaway was from it as well. Alex M. Hey guys, I was bored at work and I surfed around the DC Craigslist personals and I came across an interesting entry.
Oh, Jesus.
See below. This is the ad.
Came across or created?
You know, column A, column B. has he got the facts wrong, but the story right? I'll let you decide.
Can we link this one in the show notes?
Nope.
Can you describe
it? Cut and paste. It's Dom Dom poly couple seeking third. My high pressure job takes a lot out of me and my wife has been left unfulfilled as of late. Arrangements will mostly be for her, but I reserve the right for the occasional threechum. We enjoy quiet morning coffee, current events, casual handheld gaming, artistic literary types preferred, experience dealing with liver patients, a huge plus. Must be okay with occasional womb withering, sob fucking, and murder. Email prez@whitehouse.gov for meeting. Surprisingly indiscreet.
Yeah, prez@whitehouse.gov. Operation.
It'd be more like thewood@citadel.edu or something.
That's pretty good. I like that.
Lumberman. Okay, Under Lumber. That'd be a pretty cool.
Under Lumber.
I bet that's his Call of Duty screen name, Under Lumber.
F Under Lumber.
April, May, and June. All three. That'd be a cool name. It's like all months and it's plausible first, middle, and last name. I finished binging this Saturday, but I haven't been able to get this question out of my mind. Did I understand correctly that the Underwoods were planning on causing terrorism that happened at the end of this episode to delay the election and buy themselves more time in order to win at a later date?
No. They're just trying to turn public opinion in
the
3 weeks that they have.
She said we need to create time.
You're right.
What if he says, need to postpone the election to fight a war?
Come on. This is the thing I don't buy. Like, so, I forget the name who it was that hates this season, hates the show, thinks it's stupid.
Dances with Wookiees.
Dance with Wookiees says, go ahead and make Frank emperor. I think you can make yourself emperor behind the scenes, and you can force the American people into a lot of things. I think once you subvert elections, like, just not having an election.
That's the line between democracy and despotism, right?
Absolutely. It's way too obvious and public of a thing for people to ever stand for not having an election at all.
That's my only problem with this plot is, like, this scandal is so huge. I think that the war doesn't bury it. It just makes people say, you're trying to bury this by going to war.
Maybe. Yeah.
But on the other hand, you're like, how? Like,
especially as it spins out and gets bigger.
I don't, but they cut a dude's head off on television. Like,
yeah.
We know that the president didn't engineer that, and I don't think a lot of people would be crucified for suggesting he did.
Okay.
So now I'm back to, like, I just, man, who knows?
I mean, fighting wars is not an excuse to not have an election.
Sure. Like, do we have elections during World War II? I'm honestly asking.
I think we did. I don't know.
Like that last, I mean,
we had an election during the most recent wars. We've had several of them.
Yeah.
Like, that's not an excuse to not, that's not an excuse to just completely subvert the political machine that is the U.S. elections. You can't do that.
Agreed. I want to say,
there's no way they'll do that. There's no way they'll go there.
Didn't Lincoln postpone the elections during this, like
that's a good question.
War? Although that makes more sense in a civil war.
Right, because it's the country fighting itself.
Yeah, like, do we let the southern states have seceded, do we let them vote? Let...
Right. And who's really going to win this vote if we have it anyway?
Yeah, we're in the middle. Yeah, we're at the middle of civil war, and then the southern guy wins.
Uh-huh.
Fuck! I don't know about that. I do know that Lincoln did a lot of pretty shady shit during wartime to win.
Maybe it happened.
To save the Union.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if that was one of them. I don't know if the election's ever been delayed for this kind of reason in America.
You are right, though. Claire does say, let's create time, and I don't know if she literally means that or figuratively. I don't know. That's a real good question.
Yeah. Freddie Denton says, we are getting closer and closer to Frank just pushing the nuclear button. Come on, Netflix, don't hold back on me. We need to see fallout before all this is said and done. I kind of agree.
If he starts building a vault, Vault 101, I'm going to be like, nope, nope.
The thing is, here's the thing about this.
Game over.
I've always struggled with this question. Why does Frank want to be president? Because if you're saying it's to acquire power, to what end? Like, if you want to be president, it's either to get power for its own sake, but, I mean...
He wants a legacy, and I don't know that anything he's done yet has secured that
legacy.
Yeah, like,
what has the Frank Underwood president stood for? They've tried to do a lot of things.
Yeah.
But they education reform, no. Gun control, no.
America Works, no.
Like, what is he passionate about? What does he think is wrong with America that he's wanting to fix? Or is this just power for power's sake? In which case, there's a lot easier ways to get power without being the goddamn president.
I mean, what he wants is legacy. And I don't know that you need to necessarily see anything wrong that you want to change. But you do need to make a change, and I don't feel like
you
got to
be remembered as not a kleptocracy either. Like, you can't just
right. That's not the legacy he wants as a murderous, warmongering.
Yeah,
you don't want that legacy.
No,
at least I don't think he wants it. He wants something that he will be proud of.
Yeah, I mean, if this
and that America will remember him as a visionary for, and like all these things.
It seems like that Frank Underwood is going, like, the fictional Frank Underwood would be, without a doubt, the worst president in U.S. history.
Oof, I would think so, yeah.
Because not only has he done terrible things, but he hasn't done them for any end. The means can't justify the end because there is no end.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, we've had a lot of do-nothing presidents and terrible presidents and great presidents. I feel like that he would be at the bottom of the heap.
Do you think that's an interesting angle for season 5? Like, Frank wins the election, and now he's got 4 years to make his mark. What is that mark going
to
be?
Well, but except for he's finally in the position he needs to be to make his mark, but he's brought down by all of his past sins. That's
right.
Got to be the storyline,
right? Down.
Yeah.
Because
I just don't see how he can get away with this. The connections are all there for
and
Hammer
to make. And he is going
to
leave his legacy, but it's not going to be the one he wants.
Now, they did mention, like, if Frank Underwood finds out about the story before we've got all of our details down, that they will start burying it. I know they mentioned that a couple episodes ago. He thinks he's got the real story.
Mm-hmm.
There's still room for Frank to go around and make sure these bodies are buried. So the second stage of that, I guess that might be some of the drama. The second stage of this investigation might not separate and blow up in the upper atmosphere. I don't know.
Maybe.
But I don't know, man. My faith is in Hammer.
Yeah.
Jared says, I want to pose a crackpot theory. You guys have talked about all the paper tiger adversaries of the Underwoods, but in the final season, I think that Francis and Claire will get elected to the office as president and vice president.
Mm-hmm.
The closing scene will be them sitting in the White House drinking whiskey. Oh, that's too bougie for them. It'd be at least scotch.
Smoke a cigarette.
And some cigar, yeah. Frank will drop to the floor with Claire standing over him. She poisoned his drink so that she could become president and will make it look like an accident with his liver.
Uh-huh.
The ultimate Francis adversary, another Underwood. I like my crackpot theory better. She would just replace his medicine with sweet tarts or something. And...
You would, wouldn't you?
Yes, it's my theory.
Right.
I advance it for the sake of its own advancement. I don't have any end. It just, you know, I want my legacy to be that I correctly called the liver pill scandal.
As I recall, Frank is not drinking right now, yeah?
Surely not.
Right. Well, I think he specifically turns down a beer with Conway and, like, I don't know whether he just doesn't want to drink with Conway or whether he's not drinking at all, but I can't imagine he's drinking.
You got a liver transplant. He's not insane.
And all this medication. Yeah, it'd be stupid.
I've never seen him really overindulge in alcohol, period. His one vice seems to be...
Well, there was that night in the with his old college buddy.
Oh, yes.
He overindulged for sure.
Yes. But I'm saying, like, his vices seem to be smoking and accumulation of power for its own end. That's it.
Yeah.
Playing video...
That's enough, I think.
Even the video games have gone by the wayside.
Yeah, and that wasn't a vice. He did that in his spare time. He had fun.
Helped him relax. How wild would it be if... We found out an American president plays online multiplayer games, and he's actually really good at it. But mm-hmm. no one, for security reasons, can ever know his user gamer tag.
That'd be awesome.
It'd be because I've heard like one of the things about Obama is he's like a surprisingly good basketball player,
And
he plays like pickup games at the White House and whatnot. Like Bush was a surprisingly good athlete.
All right. I think most of these guys were like athletes in college too.
So it's like that's like next generation. Like you might have like a guy who's like an MLG level player, and that's what he does to blow off steam.
And he's like StarCraft 3 or whatever.
He's running around as you know POTUS number one.
Who am I kidding? It'll be League of Legends 2 or Dota 3. Nobody's
sure.
playing StarCraft anymore.
Sure. Well, you know StarCraft 5 will come out by then. Anyway, Underwood from Philadelphia. I think he's named after the show's namesake. One thing I would have changed is to have Claire also say something during Frank's last talking directly to the camera moment.
Mm.
She does look at him, so it seems like she knows what's happening, but it would have been cool to see Claire join in on that too. As I was watching it real time, I was kind of like, is she going to say something? Is she going to say something? I feel like the way they did it was perfect. She looked at us, but she didn't say anything yet. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I already kind of gave my opinion on this. I do think that she was actually joining him in that fourth wall breakage, and I didn't need a line from her.
Jeff wonders, is there any moment in the series where Claire is around Frank while he is breaking the fourth wall? I think it would be cool to think that she had been aware of us the whole time, just letting Frank do his thing and speak to us, and just now decided to make it a point that she knew we were there the whole time. That's a cool interpretation. I don't know that it's support. I'm not going to go back and look at all the episodes to see if she ever... seemed aware of it, but
I wonder if there's a supercut of Frank breaking the fourth wall, because that might tell you.
That could be. But regardless, I think it's a cool interpretation, even if there is no direct text to support it.
Mm-hmm.
Flukes from Calgary says, guys, the new Threachum is clearly called the Triumvirate.
Triumvirate?
Yeah, like the Triumvirate from the Julius Caesar times.
Yeah, I don't get
Triumph
it.
Triumvirate.
Sorry, I know nothing about that time period.
I thought you did the hardcore history, Fall of the Republic.
I did, but I don't remember that part.
All right.
Remember a lot of political backstabbing.
Someone zoned out in the only good episode he had in that series.
Man, it's a 16-hour marathon. What do you expect?
Drew from our own hold.
Is that in the last one? Because I might not even have gotten to the last one.
And that's the only, in my opinion, that's the only one that's worth listening to. Like,
right.
I
petered out on that series.
I know he consistently has a problem is not knowing where to begin these stories. And when you're in, and also, like, I felt like he was hyper aware of people, like, he says this is the fall of the Republic, but he completely ignored the 100 years to let it. And he's like, fuck you. I'm going to give you all the history of the end of the Republic. But honestly, you know, I felt like he could have done well to concentrate on the stuff with Julius Caesar and his compatriots, Mark Antony and Cleopatra, all the really famous shit.
Ricky Martin, sure.
Yeah, Drew from our old hometown of Indianapolis said, damn, what an ending. Awesome season. Can't wait to see wartime Frank and Claire. As an aside, want to say that to Jim and Aaron that the three-episode podcast was perfect for the Netflix format. I liked watching the three-episode chunks instead of just binging like I do for other Netflix shows. Are you thinking of doing the three-episode podcast or Orange is the New Black or other Netflix shows?
This guy mentioned anything about having listened to our previous seasons of House of Cards, because I'm wondering if he has, like,
well, I know that
the single episode versus three episode perspective, and is choosing three over one.
I think so, because Drew's been around for a while.
Okay.
Isn't Drew, didn't we meet him at one of the Walker Stalker Cons?
Man, we meet so many people at those things.
But I know, there's one guy I know from Indianapolis, and I thought this, I've always thought on the forums,
yeah, we went
guy.
To, the bar with him.
I don't know if it's Drew or not.
Well, I know he was from Indianapolis.
Sure.
For sure.
There are lots of people from Indianapolis. Anyway.
Not that I've met in person.
Regardless, I think he's been around at least since last year.
Okay.
And so I'm just going to, and I also, there's other people that mentioned as an aside too. I just want to read one of representative. It seems like this was at least, and I know there's always going to be people that want the full episode by episode coverage. And I will say that I think what gets lost is some of the jokes. Like, if we had done this the whole time, I don't know that we ever come up with the Meacham. I don't think we ever make fun of Kevin Spacey's
Meacham.
The Freecham.
The Meacham. That's just his name, man.
And that's so famous now. It's just the Meacham. I know we wouldn't have made fun of like Frank's terrible baseball throw. There'd have been a lot of things that we wouldn't have had as much fun with. But it does feel like the pacing. This is almost how this show needs to be paced.
Yeah, I wonder. I wonder what a four episode chunk looks like.
I don't know,
because I do get the feeling that maybe Netflix was going for that.
Because my modification to Orange and the New Black last year is I did two a week, which ended about 6 to 7 weeks. But if you know, from an interest and traffic standpoint, it does seem like there's a huge fall off at the even at the 3 week time.
Yeah.
So banging this out in 2 weeks and doing it in big chunks feels like it's kind of lined up with people's viewing habits. I thought it was comfortable a pace that as we could have maintained through the busy stretch that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm thinking about doing it for, I mean, obviously we're doing the episode by episode for Daredevil starting today.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really strongly thinking about doing that for Orange as a new cast.
It'd be a lot less wrangling of people for you too. Like a lot less logistical overhead.
No, well, not only
trying to get four episodes as opposed to
and two 13. A week, two a week. Where this is, you know, I still probably do two a week, but it would be the other thing is I feel like it's a lot easier to just consolidate stuff. It saves time because when you're doing episode by episode, you're like, oh, I wonder if this, I wonder if that, I wonder if this. Whereas now you're only really wondering in big kind of arc things because a lot of the episode to episode stuff just washes out.
Yeah.
So you know, obviously our podcasts weren't 3 hours long. Last year, we were doing hour and a half episodes per, so there's time savings there, too.
Yep.
Anyway, we reserve the right to do whatever the hell we want, anytime we want. the audience can advise and consent, but I was happy with the way this went, and I was glad that I didn't see any real strong grumblings about, we think this sucks.
Yeah.
Because it was kind of the mother of necessity, but I thought it was a pretty good invention. That's all we got. If you want to give feedback, I would strongly recommend going to forums.baldmove.com because it's going to be another year before we get around to the email feedback.
Right.
But yeah, I think I was on the fence about whether we would do a fifth season. I can't imagine not doing a fifth season now.
Right. Finish out the series, and this one was good enough to justify it. I'm all in on season 5.
I am reserving the right to tell them to go fuck themselves if there's a season 6.
Okay. That's fair.
With no Kevin Spacey or Robin Wright. Like, this isn't a death pact.
Yeah.
This isn't a till death do us part moment. But yeah, I'm definitely in on season 5. But until then, I'm your host, Aaron.
I'm Jim.
See ya.